Mr. Bevis, reel two.
I think you said that the favourite at the top was the ERA. That went first.
Yes. But you went on a separate list for ERA. Some boys didn't. They had no ambition for the Navy. But my name could have been for that and the dockyard. But it's the same exam. And of course, they took those out too, the ERAs. They scooped up quite a number of the top places. I don't know how many entry they would take. I knew about 10 of them, but the total number I...
And quite a few boys would also go for the shipwright training as well.
Well, there was 34 of us.
And you got 1,100 marks, I think you said.
Somewhere in that.
One of the reasons a lot of boys would go for the shipwright was, I think you said, because it gave you a chance to get to the...
The Royal College of Constructors, Whitworth Scholarship. Well, several scholarships, I can't remember them all. I remember those two. Of course, they revised that when you went down. They said, well, you know, you've done very well and these are open to you if you continue your studies. Well, then when you went in, dockyard apprentices were compelled to do 12 months at school. That's a dockyard school. But naval apprentices, and of course ERAs in their training, we had to do 3 years. Compulsory, which comprised of 2 evenings a week from 6 to 8 and all Wednesday afternoons.
And you took the advice that was given by these people who were, you know, around, you consulted, and Mother probably helped you as well. You said, though, that maybe in some ways you might have been better to have gone for the joinery. In some ways, you might have been better off if you had taken the joinery apprenticeship.
No. I didn't intend that impression, no. Because joiners are still only first-class rates in the Navy. Of course, it's a easier job, I think, than our job. More out of the weather on that, because it was furniture and...
More comfortable, convenient job. Mm. Let me just go on and talk a wee bit about the training you got. And the first thing that you just said there earlier was the first thing you had to buy was your own tools, if you were starting. Tell me about the sort of money you'd have to spend and how you saved up and how you bought the various tools and the ones you bought.
Well, of course, it was spread over 5 years. And as I say, we used to, if we had to buy a chisel, you could buy the handle for a shilling, you could buy the blade for a shilling. That was a fortnight to get one chisel. Then the dockyard allowed you to make certain tools. All your wood planes you made in the dockyard as training. Your mallets you made for training. You only bought a hammerhead. You made the handle for training. You made your own toolbox for training. Quite a number of them. Your gauges, wood gauges, you made those by in the dockyard. Quite a number of them you made and could acquire. But you had to have this. I had the list somewhere because I lost mine in a fire and I had to get the value in 1915 for the compensation. And I went to Hooper's here that we always used to buy our tools, and they had a copy of the Admiralty list which they gave me to get this compensation. But They would only pay on what I paid for them.
What were your earnings at that time as an apprentice? What were they each year?
You started at four shillings a week for 48 hours, and that went up by two shilling increments until your last year. But so far, I don't know where you could say it was lucky. As the war come on, you got the inflation in the first war. And I think in about 1916, they bought out that all boys 15 years and over should get a pound.
Yes, that was interesting. Inflation and earnings.
Yes.
You actually got better off as the war went on.
Yes. Of course.
Yes, that was the basic earnings. There was.
Yes, you could increase that by being on piecework and double bottom allowances and one thing and the other.
The apprentices got overtime as well, did they?
Yes, compulsory overtime after, as the war progressed. I used to work till 7:30 every night, and Saturdays at 4 o'clock, I think it was.
So your earnings would go up
yes,
quite a bit?
Yes, you got paid hourly.
Aside from these special occasions, your training was blocked off in certain ways, wasn't it? In the way that 4 months would be
yes.
on mass and spars, 4 months on boat work. Yes, the first year actually was spent on, as we said, on mass and spars on boat work. And you were working with an instructor?
Yes, he got 2 shillings for instructing you. And that was the great incentive. In those days when 2 shillings was 2 shillings.
And what form did it take, the instruction? Would you be assigned to him and he would take you through the paces, or would you just work generally?
Well, he would get his job and you would have to assist him. And some were quite good, of course, like everything else. You had good, bad and indifferent. You had some that couldn't care less, but by and large, the majority of them were. And if you showed an interest, I mean, that was half the battle.
It was one man to a boy?
Yes.
Can you mind any jobs that you got in the first early period that you were particular, that you remember distinctly from that time?
Yes, that mast at Horsey, when the aircraft went into it. Of course, I always thought it was a solid mast. But we had the job and it's all blocks. Somewhat like the Eiffel Tower is in steel, that was in wood. And we had that job, which was quite interesting. But we only assembled it in the dockyard. The mastheadmen, as they called them, they went out and re-erected it.
It had been hit by a
low-flying aircraft. That was 1916, I suppose. There's a big wireless mast out here at Horsey Island. I don't know whether it's still in existence.
And during the time you were under training, there were trade tests too, I think you said, every month.
No, you had to record in a book. You had a foolscap size book, bound book, divided into sections. You had your mast yards and spars was set question for the Admiralty. How would you strike a mast? And you would have to give an explanation and probably a diagram of the method used, or pumps if you were in the fitting or in the joinery. You had all the different joints you had to describe, and also, and you had to hand those in to the constructor who marked them and made his comment that, of course, they were very much stereotyped on, I might say. But as I said, if you didn't complete these, and that was away from your work. I mean, you had to do those in the more or less like homework was. Yeah, some of them took quite a time. Some of the diagrams.
This was addition to your night school and your
principal.
This was weekend work.
Yes.
And if you failed these, if you didn't do them, according to what they expected, what could happen?
Well, luckily, I don't remember anybody that didn't conform, but. Well, you would simply be reported to the Admiral Superintendent, and he would probably have you in the office and give you a good talking to about it.
And during your apprenticeship, you were sent in 1916 to Jutland, not to Jutland, but to Rosyth, after the Battle of Jutland.
Yes, the next day.
The next day. Tell me about this. Tell me about your time in Rosyth and the kinds of work that you were getting out there.
Well, they drafted us up. Oh, we went on a roundabout route, went over to Carlisle and, well, I don't know, they dashed us all over the place because of hospital trains and one thing and the other. We eventually got there and we were then put in Tin Town in Rosyth with just a number of sheds erected by the Admiralty. Furnished by the Admiralty, everything supplied, excepting the food. And that was contracted to Ross of Scotland, the big grocers at that time, I think they still are. And all the, what I found and what everybody else did, that if you had some bacon that was just on the turn, it went down to for immediate consumption. And we lived on sandwiches, we had cheese sandwiches, meat sandwiches. Well, there was always sandwiches. At any rate, it ended up that, of course, they told us that we were there as an emergency and we had to stop there. Well, then there came a time when they closed the beer hall. We were night shifts nearly all the time. And the Commodore there, Commodore Bruce, I think his name was, you see, when you're on night shifts, you get a break at 12 to 1, when the men used to go over and eat these sandwiches and buy their beer in the dockyard canteen. But he decided, for some unknown reason, to close it. And there was a real rumpus. They got him out of his bed at 12 to 1 and got that open, and then we found out that we'd been conned, that wasn't the Admiralty's intention. It was a local order, and that's how I come to go to Edinburgh, because as soon as we found we weren't there, weren't supposed to be kept there, I went to Edinburgh. As I say, I had a very nice landlady, as I say, we were night shifts patching these boats up, making them seaworthy as much as we could, so that they could go to other ports because Rosyth wasn't only had the one dock and couldn't cope. They didn't have the numbers there.
And you also met some quite terrifying, frightening things, on these ships.
All the superstructures were all twisted and the funnels were, masts were smashed. The gunnery in the opening part must have been really good. Of course, we all know it still wasn't decisive.